Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On Friday night, President Trump announced he would delay a campaign rally that had been scheduled in Tulsa, Oklahoma, for this Friday, June 19th, which is Juneteenth, the commemoration of the end of slavery in the United States. Now, the Trump rally will now be held on Saturday, but it will still be in Tulsa, a city that witnessed one of the deadliest events of racial violence in U.S. history, 99 years ago this month. And it'll be held in there in the midst of a nationwide uprising of protests against anti-Black police brutality. So were the president and his team unaware of the history of the Tulsa race massacre when white looters and rioters destroyed 35 blocks of an affluent Black neighborhood known as Black Wall Street that left 800 injured and 36 dead? To understand this moment, we need to know what came before it. And there are few people who know that better than my next guest. In 2016, filmmaker Stanley Nelson received a Peabody Award for, quote, his pursuit of social justice, his continuing commitment to documenting the civil rights movement, and his soaring talent as a documentarian filmmaker. His award-winning docs include The Murder of Emmett Till, Freedom Riders, and The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution, which won the 2016 NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Documentary Film, and which will be streaming free, F-R-E-E, on PBS.org through July 4th, alongside new and existing PBS programming focused on race in America. The doc tells the origins of the Black Panthers, its impact, takes on misconceptions, and illuminates its goals, including its goals for the Black community. Here is a clip about the Black Panthers' free breakfast program for school kids. The first voice you're going to hear is Black Panther David Lemieux.
Studies came out saying that children that didn't have a good breakfast in the morning were less attentive at school and less inclined to do well and suffered from fatigue. I mean, there was all sorts of scientific reasons to have a good breakfast in the morning. And we just simply took that information and a program was developed serving breakfast to children.
After my father came home from Vietnam and was discharged from the Army and couldn't get work, we were going through a very hard time. Food was kind of, you know, the everyday necessities were hard. I was embarrassed to go, but when you went, you know, kids are all laughing. And then all of a sudden, the stigma, or whatever you thought was a stigma, went away, and really got to see that, yes, this is what the Black Panthers are.
That was from the Black Panthers' Vanguard of the Revolution. And one more thing to bring it full circle. Last week, Stanley Nelson announced two more projects he'll be developing. One is a film about the 1971 Attica uprising, and the other is a docuseries about the 1921 Tulsa race massacre. Stanley Nelson, welcome to All of It.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So why do you think it's important for this film in particular, this Black Panthers film, to be available for free right now?
Well, I mean, I think it's important that we understand the history of the protests. We understand the history of protests and action against police violence. The Panthers started in 1966 as a group of six young men in Oakland, California. It started because of the violence of the police in Oakland. I mean, that's how it started. This was 1966, so what's that, you know, 50-something years ago? And it's still going on.
You said in an interview recently, quote, I've always believed the civil rights movement needed Martin Luther King, but it also needed Malcolm X and the Black Panthers. That's where we are today. It's more of a Black Panther movement. What are some of the similarities you see between the Black Panthers and the uprising now?
Well, I mean, I think now it's an uprising that includes largely young people. The Panthers were very young. It's not kind of one organization with one leader, like Martin Luther King. And it's about the rage and outrage against police violence. And, you know, we just hope that it continues, the protests continue, and young people who are politicized stay politicized.
It's really interesting when you look at the Black Panthers 10-point program. I mean, they were remarkably forward-thinking. And also, so many of the things they wanted were remarkably similar. We want an end we want decent housing fit for the shelter of human. We want decent education for our people. We want free health care for all. We want immediate end to police brutality. The one that blew my mind, Stanley, was the one that says we want people's community control of modern technology. Talk about how forward-thinking that is. Why do you think they were as innovative as they were in their ideas?
Well, I mean, I think in one sense, the problems that we have, especially the problems, you know, in the inner city, are the same as they were then. Mm. So, you know, it just seems that they're very prophetic, but they were looking at the problems that they had then, and nothing has really changed that much for the majority of people. You know, I think the civil rights movement was very successful for some people, but for the majority of African Americans, they're basically living in the same way that they did in 1966.
Why are these basics still an issue? Housing, education, end of violence?
Because I think they've never been a priority, you know, for mm-hmm. this country. I think this country can solve those problems, but they've never been a priority. And I think that it takes a will to change. And we'll see, you know, how that plays out as we go forward. I think there's been a, you know, a lot of talk. People are, you know, in the streets protesting. There's been a lot of talk about change. But we'll see. I mean, we're already getting the pushback that, you know, from police departments and others, obviously, you know, Trump and his administration, that say there is no systemic problem. You know, it's a bunch of bad apples.
My guest is Stanley Nelson. The name of the film is The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. It's free to stream on PBS.org until July 4th. You mentioned this. One of the points that the film makes so early is that the Black Panthers were really, really young. Let's take a listen to a clip. Here's Kathleen Cleaver, wife of Eldridge Cleaver, talking about the youth of the movement.
You're talking about people who are teenagers. 17, 18, 19, 20. That's the bulk of the Panthers are teenagers. So the fact that we were so young and the fact that this hadn't happened before, I'm not certain that we recognize how startling it looked to other people.
Stanley, why were they so young?
I think that you know, movements and revolutions are always made by young people. You know, there have been no old folks revolution, I don't think, in the history of the world. You know, so it's young people who can get out of the streets and fight for change. It's young people who say, you know, I've got 50, 60, 70 more years to live, and I want to change things. And I think that's an important step. You know, that I think for this movement now, young people for the first time are getting out there. I have 21-year-old twins and a 30-year-old daughter, and they're all out there every day. We were up in Cape Cod, and my 21-year-old twins a week and a half ago, said, you know, they wanted to go back to New York. They had to get back to New York and get out there and protest. And these are people who weren't that, you know, involved politically before that, but they are now. And I think that they're typical of people out there, you know, of all races.
I'm curious about the location of where the Black Panthers started in Oakland. How did that factor into their origins and sort of the ethos of the group?
I think, you know, Oakland, one, California was known for you know, it's kind of a tone-deaf, violent police. They actually, you know, recruited police from the Deep South, from, you know, Arkansas and places like that, you know, to come to California and be. So the police were unbelievably violent. Also, you know, Oakland was a city that had a huge Black population. But a huge segregation, and the Panthers came up out of that. But, you know, I don't think it had to come out of Oakland. One of the things that happened when the Panthers formed is very quickly the movement spread all across the country. And, you know, we have people in the film from Chicago, New York, and saying, as soon as I heard about the Panthers, I wanted to join. I wanted to start a Black Panther chapter in my city. So it started in Oakland, but it quickly spread around the country, because the same way that the death of George Floyd has spread, you know, a movement around the country, it's and around the world. I mean, I think there were protests in every single state mm-hmm. in the United States.
My guest is Stanley Nelson. We're talking about his film, The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. It's incredible viewing in this moment, I have to tell you. So, you know, it's interesting. You also focus on the women who were part of the Black Panthers and how that they were very much a part of the movement, even though they necessarily weren't up front. Let's take a listen to another clip from the doc that features historian Claiborne Carson, some historical footage of Kathleen Cleaver, who we heard from earlier, and final words from Black Panther Party chairwoman Elaine Brown.
One of the ironies of the Black Panther Party is that the image is the black male with the jacket and the gun, but the reality is the majority of the rank and file at by the end of the 60s are women.
Everybody knows that all the people don't have liberties, all the people don't have freedom, all the people don't have justice, and all the people don't have power, so that means none of us do.
The Black Panther Party certainly had a chauvinist tone, and so we tried to change some of the clear gender roles so that women had guns and men cooked breakfast for children. Did we overcome it? Of course we didn't. As I like to say, we didn't get these brothers from revolutionary heaven.
So it's such an interesting point she made. I know that makes me laugh too, that she makes. What was the role of women in the Black Panthers?
The women had every role there was, you know, in the Panthers. So, you know, Kathleen Cleaver, Lane Brown were leaders and spokespeople. The women were just, you know, part of what was called the rank and file of the Panthers. I think what's hugely interesting there is that there were so many women in the party. You know, it was much more photographic and photogenic to shoot the men in leather jackets with the guns, and you know, so that's what we saw. But I think also it's important to understand that, you know, women have led the civil rights movement, in not only the Panthers, but, you know, the what we look at as the traditional civil rights movement, the movement of Martin Luther King. You know, the backbone of that were women, you know, and a lot of times, you know, for whatever reason, partially because of the times, you know, the men were out in front, but women were always, I think, the backbone of the movement here in this country.
How much of the image of the Black Panthers was calculated? The look, the berets, the jackets, the guns?
It was totally calculated, and we talk about that in the film. I mean, they were very, very media savvy. You know, they were very smart. They knew how to get themselves, you know, coverage, and that it was part of what they wanted was coverage, and they got it. So I think it was part of what they wanted. But I also think that one of the things that it did, especially the rhetoric, was it kind of painted them into a corner, because they had to kind of keep the rhetoric going. You know, how do you raise the rhetoric? How do you keep it going? And I think as they wanted to move away from, you know, the guns and that look, that's not what they were known for. And so they had to keep something else going that would get them in the media all the time.
What are some of the misconceptions that you wanted to correct with this film about the Black Panthers?
Well, there's so many. I mean, you know, one, that they were just this militant group carrying guns. Two, that they were out there on their own. We show them, you know, in women movement marches. We show them in anti-war marches, that they were part of that. But also that they were attacked by the government, by the FBI in particular, by J. Edgar Hoover, who said they were the most dangerous threat to the internal security of the United States. You know, and COINTELPRO was basically enacted to go get the Panthers, and the FBI did whatever it could and whatever it took, and really destabilized the Panther movement.
One of the things I found interesting is how threatening it became when the Black Panthers started to find allies among poorer and lower economically disadvantaged white people. Why did the FBI fear that allyship so much?
I think, you know, J. Edgar Hoover feared any change, and he also, had a memo where he said that one of the big fears with the Panthers was the fear of a black messiah kind of running, coming out of the Panthers. And one of the places that they were most fearful of was Chicago, with Fred Hampton, who was the young leader of the Black Panthers in Chicago. And that was, and you know, what they feared was a real revolution, and that would be a combination of black, brown, and white people. And the Panthers in Chicago were reaching out to white groups and forming alliances. And Fred Hampton had to be destroyed.
And he was murdered. It's what do you think the current Black Lives Matter movement could learn from the Black Panthers, both something that is positive that they should do and perhaps something that they should avoid, it should avoid?
You know, it's probably, in a really funny way, the same thing. I think that they are, you know, in many ways, we see Black Lives Matter as a leaderless movement. You know, unless you're totally involved in the movement, you know, it would be very hard for you to tell me who are the leaders of Black Lives Matter. And that makes it a little bit harder to have that publicity, that spokesperson out there. You know, TV shows, radio shows, like, who do I book? You know, how do I do that? And so that makes it a little harder, but it also makes the movement a little stronger. The Panthers, in many ways, were destroyed when their leaders were destroyed. When their leaders faltered, the whole movement faltered. So I think in some ways, Black Lives Matter's strength might be seen as a kind of weakness. But I'm not sure. You know, I mean, I think whatever they're doing right. You know, and so it seems to be working now.
My guest is Stanley Nelson. He is the director of the Black Panthers Vanguard of the Revolution, which you can watch on PBS.org until July 4th. I also want to talk about your documentary, Freedom Riders. It's a very different kind of documentary, telling a very different kind of story. Could you explain how the philosophy of the Freedom Riders was as compared to the Black Panthers?
That's an interesting question. I think in some ways they were the same. Freedom Riders were a very nonviolent movement that it was totally nonviolent. But I think one of the things that I've talked about in the last few days is there's a statement that Julian Bond makes in the beginning of Freedom Riders, that when they got on these buses to go down south, that, you know, they don't want anything bad to happen, but they also want it to happen because they need the publicity, and that's what they were after. So it's really interesting. You know, both of these groups knew that they had to get press, knew that they had to raise the stakes, knew that only by the world watching would things change. And I think that's one of the things that's happening today, is young people or people out there in the streets, you know that they have to keep it going, because that's the only way things will change.
You know, the Freedom Riders were groups of black and white activists working together. And as we mentioned, even the Black Panther Party worked aside the Young Lords and white Southerners. And we see this now. We see a very mixed group of people out there protesting. What does that say to you as someone who watches history?
It's one of the great things to see. I mean, when you see on TV, and, you know, I know the in the first days of the protests now, you know, we're watching TV. We're like, wait a minute, everybody's out there. You know, those aren't just black people. And it's really heartening to see. I think it means that there's a vast movement for change in this country, and that's really important. I think that's very different than where we were, you know, a few years ago. You know, maybe even in Ferguson, which looked like it was much more of an African American movement. But I think it's important that white people understand that it's important that they change. You know, and I think that's what we're seeing. And I think that, you know, change is not easy. You know, and I think that it's just not easy. And so it's important that it's a multiracial movement, and that, you know, we start talking a little bit more about race, and the white people really talk to each other about race, because I think that's something that I think has not been done.
So let me ask you about Tulsa before I let you go. You're making this documentary about the Tulsa Race Massacre called Terror in Tulsa. What can you say about it now?
I think, you know, it's a project that I'm so glad to be involved in. It's with Russell Westbrook, who spent 11 years in Oklahoma playing basketball and is a real lover of Oklahoma and is really loved there. Greenwood was a black part of Tulsa, and where black people went from all over the country to kind of find freedom and dignity in the West, and they went out there and formed their own community in Greenwood. It was very, very successful. Mm-hmm. You know, it had stores and beauty shops and barbershops, everything. It was a completely self-contained community. And, one day in massive violence against it, the place was burned down, over 1,000 homes were burned down. Hundreds of people were killed. It's probably the largest race massacre in the history of this country. We're working on a four-part series about that massacre, but also talking about the where the community is today. They're still looking for the mass graves where the bodies of the black people were buried. So it's a film that talks about the present and the past. And it's an incredible story. It's one of those stories that's very kind of a myth in the African American community, the American community, very much like the Black Panthers. And one of the things we want to do is really bring the facts to life.
The president decided to move his rally to the day after Juneteenth, but it's still happening in Tulsa, just a couple weeks after the anniversary of the massacre. As of today, the Tulsa newspaper and the Tulsa's top health official has asked him to cancel the event. What do you think about the president's decision?
I think it's crazy. I mean, I think in so many ways, I think it's crazy to do it in Tulsa, which has historical significance, so much historical significance for black people. I think, to bring all those people together, he has people signing waivers. Because they're not going to wear masks, it's the ultimate way that you should not have people get together, indoors, all crowded together, all yelling and screaming without masks. I mean, what could be worse? It's all part of the spectacle that is going on in this country with this president that I think is just, so strange and so insulting to so many people and dangerous. We've had over 100,000 people die of coronavirus, more than any place in the world. And to do this, what message does it send about the virus? What message does it send about, any kind of caring about the African American community?
My guest has been documentary filmmaker Stanley Nelson. The Black Panthers is now streaming on PBS through July 4th. Stanley, thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you so much.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.